AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. That storm that blew through during yesterday afternoon's show, it did some damage to crops in eastern Iowa. That's going to add some complexity to harvest, which means stress. We'll talk about managing harvest season stress and check in with Illinois and North Dakota on today's Farmer Forum.
Live from beneath a series of mildly to moderately threatening skyscapes via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a discussion with Ted Matthews from farmcounseling.org. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Mike Appert and Gary Niemeyer. Right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank buddy. You very much.
Right on.
So, had to go for a drive after the show yesterday. Actually, a couple hours after the show yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Waited for the storms to wrap up and move out of the area and headed to the east. And there is significant damage to crops.
Oh, boy.
East of the bunker and north of the bunker. It kind of skirted me just to the northeast. But, boy, I don't know. Davis, from north of Waverly down to Littleton,
mm-hmm.
What is that, 40, 45 miles?
About that, yep.
Yeah. So, and then a path to the east of that, including over around Manchester, including over in Dubuque County. So, I mean, it stretches on for quite a ways to the east as well. If you're in the middle of it, God, it stinks. To be in the middle of something like that. We've got to wait and see if that corn is going to be able to stand up a little bit. I don't know if it will at this time of the year. Some of it's got a heavy ear on it. But, Davis, one of the things that really struck me, and I've gone through storm-damaged areas before.
Sure you have, yeah.
But one of the things that really struck me is how laid flat the beans were. It was stunning. It was stunning how laid flat the beans were. Now, Olwine Airport, very small airport, mm-hmm. to the east of the bunker, about 30, 35 miles, clocked a wind of 100 mile an hour.
100 miles per hour.
Yeah. Does that sound a little bit like derecho stuff?
Just a little bit.
I got a feeling that at some point when we wrap this up, it's either going to be there was a mixture of tornadoes out there, or they're going to call this flatline thing another derecho.
I don't think we have any choice. We got to send Brian Grady back out to the Eastern Belt to resurvey the crop tour areas. I'll let you tell him though.
Okay. Yeah, so that's something that we're going to have to keep tabs on and try to figure out exactly what's happening.
There's
storms blowing up in southern Iowa again today and have already made their way into parts of Illinois. So keep an eye on it. It's unpredictable weather time. Okay,
sure.
Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip, COVID-19 outbreaks in sparsely vaccinated Asian countries are disrupting factories, adding to a long list of challenges to delivering goods ahead of the holiday season. Authorities in Vietnam have ordered some plants to shut and others to drastically reduce workers affecting Western brands Adidas, Crocs, and Steve Madden that rely heavily on manufacture there. The added costs from lockdowns in the region will further increase the sales price of consumer goods, including shoes, which in July was up 4.6% from a year earlier in the United States. In a related note, labor shortages are materializing across China as young people shun factory jobs and more migrant workers stay home, offering a possible preview of larger challenges ahead as the workforce ages and shrinks. This, according to the Wall Street Journal. With global demand for Chinese goods surging this year, factory owners say they are struggling to fill jobs that make everything from handbags to cosmetics.
Right.
Let's pause there. Let's pause there. So you got your shoes, your handbags, and your cosmetics. What are we going to get these gals for Christmas?
Yeah, well, I was thinking instead of shoes, I guess the kids are getting beef and pork again. You know, if I can get that handled. But those labor shortages, China has gone from a one child policy to a two-child policy and just raised it to three-child because they know that they're going to run out of workers if they don't increase that population.
Yep. And in other China news quickly, Huawei is reportedly back in business with the U.S. According to Reuters, the blacklisted Chinese company can now buy chips from the U.S. for its auto component enterprise. Chip U.S. banks bought a record $150 billion in treasury bonds last quarter, hugely expanding their holdings relative to the new loans they have written. But with loan demand remaining sluggish, lenders are reluctantly buying bonds guaranteed to generate skimpy returns.
Yeah.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and House moderates reached a budget deal as the House approved the embattled budget resolution, paving the way for the $3.5 trillion social spending package. The action came after a pressure campaign by Democratic leaders. The deal used an obscure procedural tool and set a September 27 deadline for passing the approximately $1 trillion physical infrastructure bill. Did you want to comment on using obscure tools to get things passed?
What's it called?
Let's see. Deem and pass, it's called.
Yeah. In other words, Pelosi knew she didn't have the votes to pass it. So not only are we pushing this social program that they hoped the whole Democrat House would support, and when they figured out that they couldn't get the support of the full of all Democrats in the House, the speakers are just – she's forcing this through.
Yep.
It's astonishing to me.
Two more things quickly. President Biden said he plans to stick with his August 31 deadline for military withdrawal from Afghanistan. And the Department of Interior Tuesday announced it will resume offshore oil and gas leasing programs in the wake of a district court ruling against the pause in the lease sales announced by the administration earlier this year. Chip.
I guess we don't want to import it, so we're going to go back.
No, we don't. We really don't.
Right. All right. Thank you so much. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How are you this morning, Margie?
Hey, Chip. Doing well.
Good, good, good. You've got some acquisitions to talk about.
Yes. So just in the last week, we've had two acquisitions in the technology space. First, Farmers Edge has acquired Commodit Ag. And then just yesterday, Simios, another Canadian company, mind you, has acquired AgWorld. And I had interviews, one-on-ones with both of the companies who were doing the acquiring, their CEOs. And I always ask in technology acquisitions, so why did you buy it instead of build it yourself? And I think that's what the key takeaway here is for the greater farm audience, is that we are seeing a consolidation in the technology space. Companies are seeing value at bringing in other companies into their house, under their platform, under their umbrella, as we could possibly, Chip, be marching toward fewer logins and maybe that, you know, nirvana state of a centralized single login for a lot of your farming data and decision-making tools.
Right, right. I mean, at some point, somebody on the farm is going to have to be responsible for managing all these different interconnected and make sure that things are working together the way they should, right?
You know, it's interesting. So real quickly, Farmers Edge, an agronomy platform acquiring Commodity Ag, an e-commerce marketplace, and then Simios, an Internet of Things technology, acquiring a planning software.
Yeah.
So a lot of interactivity going on there and building out this digital ecosystem.
That's right. That's right. Good stuff, Margie. Keep us updated on all that. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. It's at Farmers Advisor on Twitter. We got Ted Matthews up next. Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin. The concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD TV.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD TV.
Life is a gamble.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you can be with us this morning. And we've got Davis Michelson with us.
Dude, Joe Stackler gave us the perfect segue. Big Apple Joe, producer extraordinaire. There's nobody better. Best in the biz.
Right.
He gave me some of the best advice, and maybe we can run this by Ted Matthews, our guest from farmcounseling.org. Did you hear what he just said to me just as we were coming in out of the break? He said, shut up and talk. Right? Did he not say that? He said, shut up and talk.
I did hear that.
I think that's some fantastic advice and maybe a great springboard for us to speak with Mr. Matthews. Ted, welcome to AgriTalk. We're so glad to have you. Sometimes you just got to shut up and talk, don't you? You got to let it out. You got to talk to somebody. Fair statement, sir?
Nobody can listen if you're not talking.
Yes. That's exactly right. Exactly right. Ted, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks. Good. Good. The sun is shining. It's a nice, beautiful day, and we got a little bit of rain last couple of days, so that's all good.
You bet. You bet it is. So, Ted, I came off a crop tour last week, and I get home, and my calendar alert popped up on Monday morning, and it said, now's the time to start getting your head right for managing the harvest season. And that was our cue to get on the horn and get you in here and have a conversation. And, you know, we are gearing up for one of the most stressful times of the year. And I mean stressful. Busy is one thing, but farmers are generally busy, and busy doesn't always translate into stress. But harvest and managing everything around it, that can be stressful. So what should farmers do right now to get in that right place to manage that stress during the harvest season, Ted?
First, by saying to themselves exactly what you just said, it is stressful. So what are you going to do with your stress rather than say, oh, well, okay, it's the way it is. If that's how you got your equipment ready, you'd still be harvesting in December.
Yeah.
You need to know, yes, it's a very stressful time. So what happens year after year? What do I do? You know, marriage counseling for me, the number one time to do marriage counseling with farmers is right after harvest, because they're nasty. And yes, we understand that with stress, you get angry, you say things, but people need to remember, you remember those things. You know, if somebody says something that really hurts your feelings, even though you understand that it's stressful, it still hurts your feelings and you're going to hold on to that. So be aware of that. And for farmers, you know, they're great at doing everything they can to have all their equipment ready before harvest. And, you know, they're literally like the Indy 500 waiting at the edge of the field to go in. And with mental health, they need to be looking at the same things. What do we go through every year? And, you know, every farmer I've ever talked to that lost a few fingers, not one of them has ever said, you know, it was worth it.
Yeah.
So understand that sleep deprivation and stress and anxiety, you have all of those things, and that's a natural thing. So you have to figure out what you can control and not focus on all the things that you have no control over. You know, when you have corn, if it's too moist and you have to wait, that drives farmers crazy. Well, driving you crazy or not driving you crazy, you have to wait. So the more you can understand and accept things that you have no control over, the better you'll be able to control things that you do have control over.
Right. Right.
Ted,
you know, go Davis.
Yeah, let me hop in. I would argue that the farmer's greatest implement isn't maybe that $250,000 tractor or whatever. It's the farmer's mind. It's the greatest tool that they have in their toolbox, and that needs to be taken care of. Sometimes when our minds feel too full, we feel a little bit overwhelmed, we have a tendency to self-medicate. Oh, I had a pretty good day out there today. Yep. I deserve, you know.
Yeah.
And then we find ourselves overdoing it, and then we set ourselves back for the next day. Can you talk about self-medicating and maybe some strategies if those for those who may be prone toward that, maybe a better option?
Well, number one, honesty is the start of that. You know, if I'm really needing to self-medicate, I need to identify that, and the people around me need to identify that too, because that's an honest reality. We need to look at mental health a lot more like we look at all other things in our life. You know, it's like with farming, we have an ABC system. Are you a better farmer when you self-medicate? The answer is, of course not. So be aware and be honest with yourself and say, this is making problems for my family and my farm, and not, oh, it's not that big of a deal because I don't want it to be that big of a deal. It is that big of a deal. And be aware and be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Be honest there's with so yourself many, and understand what's going on.
And there's so many factors, you know. With, you know, if I gave out 10 things about the stresses on farms during harvest, several of your listeners would listen and say, well, one of those doesn't affect me, and therefore, that's all a bunch of crap. It's like, well, it doesn't have to all affect you. Pick the ones that do. You know, don't judge the ones that don't and say, that doesn't affect me. Look at the ones that do affect you and go from there. Again, it's, you know, use some common sense and some logic. Stressful. One of the biggest issues that I see all the time is with sleep deprivation and, excuse me, and it's not COVID, by the way, you know, every time somebody coughs, they all look at me like, oh my God. Anyway, when we have sleep deprivation, if I ask a group of farmers, and I do this all the time, you know, I ask a group of farmers and I pick out individuals, how many hours a night of sleep do you need? And I always use the word need. And, you know, some will say five, some will say six, some will say eight. Well, when harvest time comes, why do you think that changes?
Yeah.
I still need that amount. Now, if I don't get it, then it's going to be a lot harder for me. And if I need 8 hours and the person I'm working with, whether it be my father or my son, or my daughter or wife, whoever I'm working with, if they only need five and I need eight, obviously I'm going to have a lot more difficulty because of my biology, not because and farmers, when they hear that four-letter word, it drives them crazy. Lazy. You know, you want to call a farmer lazy, you might as well just slap them upside the head, because that's exactly what it feels like to them. And if I can't function on less than X amount of sleep, that means I can't function on less than X amount of sleep. So I have to accept that. And I have to, and the best way to do that is to build that into your plan.
Right.
You know, before harvest, look at, I need, and then fill in the blank, I need, and go from there. There are things about that are really stressful with farmers that nobody else has. You know, it's like, how much money do I make? Well, I'll let you know after the harvest. Man alive, that sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to know.
Hey.
Because based on what I know, and so is that stressful? Of course it is. You know, and if you know, one bushel an acre can make or break a farmer, as far as the cost goes and as far as the, and so all of those factors. And by thinking about all those things, they're not thinking about what's in front of them and what tools they're using and so on. So be aware of the fact that it's really easy to drift off and start thinking about what I'm going to have to pay, what, you know, will the harvest be good enough? Won't it be good enough? Well, the prices, if I'm doing all of those things and I'm trying to work with heavy equipment, that's a scary scenario. So just be aware.
Be aware. Be aware of your limitations and be aware of what you can do. And what you said at the very start about how your marriage counseling ramps up after harvest season. And it's because a lot of things can be said during harvest that maybe you don't want to. But think about this, guys. When you say it, and then you climb back in that combine cab with all the technology that pretty much drives itself, you are left there to think. And if you're going to be thinking about what you just said to somebody that you love and somebody that you care about, pick up the phone and talk to them immediately and say,
"Boom,
guys, I didn't mean to say that. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. Let's move forward and make things better." Ted, it's always good to talk with you. Thank you so much. We need to stay in touch, okay?
You bet. You take care of yourselves.
All right. That's Ted Matthews, farmcounseling.org.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, a little bit of strength back in the corn market, but this bean market's kind of a go-nowhere affair today.
Yeah, so corn traded lower through early morning hours, and then we got here to mid-morning and kind of caught a little bit of a bid and pushed to the upside. So, you know, I don't think it's anything of significance at this point in time other than there was buyer interest underneath the market. Now, interestingly, there weren't any daily sales this morning. So, you know, much of this, I think, is just corrective action and pushing to the upside, rebounding from last Friday's losses. But there are some key technical levels above the market that we probably need to push at least a couple cents to a dime higher to get through. And some of those are the short and intermediate moving averages.
Right, absolutely. Those momentum indicators have been playing a major role in how this market trades over the past couple of weeks. Wheat market, not a lot going on there. What's happening?
Yeah, spring wheat market kind of got a mixed tone right now. Winter wheat market's favoring the downside. And, you know, they were pretty quiet earlier this week and just remains the case. You know, not a whole lot of trading activity going on, more spreading between the markets than anything else.
Gotcha. Take us to lean hogs. Caught a bid this morning.
Yeah, so corrective recovery there being led by the front end of that market. You know, we've talked about it for a long time, but just big, huge, much wider than normal discounts to the cash index and finally giving us some support there and finding some buyer interest. Kind of a mixed tone in both the live cattle and feeder cattle markets so far this morning.
Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, and it's time to get the Farmer Forum started. It is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement, an initiative that deploys extensive nationwide outreach and education, empowering farmers to adopt profitable conservation and stewardship practices on their farms. Sponsors include NCGA, SIMPAS, Valent USA, and the Farm Journal Foundation. To learn more, visit www.agweb.com/ACAM. Gary Niemeyer over in Illinois joins us. Gary, my friend, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, great talking with you again, Chip. I'm fine.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad that you're with us. Glad you're with us. We're going to get right back to you here in just a minute. And Mike Appert up in North Dakota. Hey, buddy, how are you?
No, I'm surviving.
Well, okay, you're surviving up there in North Dakota. How about that corn crop and bean crop? How's it surviving?
Oh, it's in pretty tough shape. You know, I think I was actually pretty impressed with USDA. I think they made a bold move there. They kind of tried to get on top of it, but it's bad, Chip. You know, we were going around with some independent people yesterday that go around and do some yield checks, and we went and looked, and I was pretty disappointed. I thought I had some soybeans that would be like 20 bushel or whatever, and we were coming up with like 12, 13, and there's some corn yields like that are 38. I mean, it's junk. We just didn't have rain, you know, didn't get any rain.
Yeah. Now, so that we are very clear on where you're at, describe it, because I think there's different conditions across the state, isn't there, Mike?
It is. You know, the eastern third of the state's better, you know, but I'm south central, so I'm right east of the Missouri River, 15 miles, just southeast of Bismarck, about 40 miles in from the South Dakota border. And actually, it gets worse from where I'm at. If I go really any direction from my place, it just gets worse for at least 100 miles. You know, it's bad to the north. It's really bad all the way into Canada. And then south is bad all the way through South Dakota. And, of course, west of my place is really rough. And it's just been tough. You know, there's a lot of corn got about waist high and died, and they chopped it. And, I mean, it's bad. It's bad. I'm not, like, dead center drought central, but it surrounds me everywhere, you know.
Yep, I hear you. Some of those spots, it's not going to be worth running the combine for, is it, Mike?
Right. We've got about 25 or 30% of our corn that won't even get harvested. It just didn't make enough grain to get anything through the machine. But I think a lot of our soybeans will harvest because, sad to say, but 10 bushel soybeans, you're going to go get them. You know, bushel soybeans, I mean, you're going to go get them. So we'll probably harvest all the soybeans. But some of the corn we won't harvest. It didn't make anything. And we did get a splash rain June 8th. Kind of just, it wasn't very wide, just a little narrow strip. It actually showed up on the drought monitor. It went from a D3 to a D2 drought. There was a little finger there that showed up on the drought monitor. And, you know, in that zone, it's 100 bushel corn. Like, it's amazing how you can get a crop out of one rain June 8th. But we checked one field yesterday, and she came up with a 127 on corn. So, you know, where we got that rain, but it's only, you know, 15% of the county, if that, you know, and so it's or even less than that, I suppose.
Jeez,
not even 10% of the county.
A June 8th rain is showing up that dramatically, and oh, man, that's amazing, Mike.
Yeah, it's a difference between 127 bushel corn and 38 bushel corn, and probably 45 bushel beans and 12 bushel soybeans. Well,
crazy.
But it was kind of our one rain event. You know, we only get one. We got that one. We got about 1.20 about the 5th of July, and then we just got one last week. So, you know, when you're living on a rain, well, a rain is better than none at all. Yeah,
that's right.
So it's been tough up here. You know, the Dakotas, northern Minnesota, you know, the northern two-thirds of Minnesota is in rough shape. It's just been tough up here. Canada lost 20 or 30 million acres, too, to the north of us. It's been rough. And west, you go to Montana, it just gets worse. It just gets worse, you know.
I hear you. Gary, you're not going to have to be making the decision on whether or not you harvest this year, are you?
No, and I tell you, my sympathy really goes out to people who are suffering with drought, et cetera. And on the other side of it, we have had probably 12 inches of rain since the 1st of June. It just keeps raining, it seems like.
Yeah. How things looking? Are they handling the water?
Well, yes and no. If you have any low areas, it's really drowned it out, but boy, the high ground sure looks good, that's for sure. And around us, we've been very fortunate. A lot of people have done some pattern tiling over the years, and those fields look great. And I will be honest, this is probably one of our better crops of corn. Nationwide, I happened to have an opportunity to be in Iowa last weekend, and boy, I tell you, it just seems like after you cross the river, things fall off real quickly.
Yeah, we sure saw that on Crop Tour, that there's a difference in it. What is really confusing about the Iowa crop this year is you get out in there, you pull the ears, you do the measurements, and it's got the components for a yield. You just don't know how it's going to finish. I mean, if we finish with small kernels, then Pro Farmer's too high. If we finish with a normal kernel, we should be pretty doggone close in Iowa, but that is still left to be determined. And then we had the storms blow through yesterday, and there's more storms in the area today. So it's a dynamic situation. Seems to be changing all the time. Gary, we've been talking this week on the show about biofuels and so on, and I know that you guys are really going to be pushing the Next Gen Fuels Act coming up here real soon. Tell us about it.
Okay, we're going to present this at the Farm Progress Show. And first of all, I want to thank the sponsors, Cherry Boutos from Illinois, James Comer from Kentucky, co-sponsor Darren LaHood, who happens to be my congressman from Illinois, Emmanuel Cleaver from Missouri, and Jason Smith from Missouri. I want to thank those, and we really encourage Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, anybody to get on this bill. The Next Generation Fuel Act cleans up our nation's gasoline supply and transitions light-duty vehicles to low-carbon, high-octane fuel use to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and improves our air quality, increases our fuel efficiency, all while supporting agriculture's contribution toward helping address this climate change. Yeah. Essentially, what we're doing is we're increasing the RONs. We've been working with the autos to increase the RONs to a 95 to 98 RON, which is a higher octane level. And by doing that, we improve the fuel efficiency by 5 to 7%. And also we can move to E20 and E30 blends. But probably more important than that is establishes a clean octane standard by limiting the aromatic hydrocarbon content of gasoline to an annual average of about 17.5% by volume beginning in 2025.
Right.
Chip, we're just trying to stay in the business and be a part of a fuel energy situation that continues to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. And Gary, if you really, by asking the automakers to take part in this, you're asking the automakers to prove that they are behind carbon reduction and GHG reductions. If they don't go along with something like this, they're saying, what we're doing is just fine. Right?
In a sense, I just want to take a second to talk about e-vehicles here, just to put it in perspective. E-vehicles, I am not against new technologies at all. In fact, I embrace them. And what I am against is political manipulation to shut down industries such as coal, natural gas, nuclear, gasoline, diesel, and ethanol to force people into windmills and solar panels. And I'm not against windmills and solar panels, but personally, I want to see these industries utilize technology such as the Next Generation Fuel Act to create, to compete organically rather than allow political manipulation to destroy our economy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well put. Well put, Mike. I mean, there's great strides to be made on the fuel side, and I know that the renewable diesel side of things has got to have you excited up there, doesn't it?
Well, it sure does. You know, we've got a plant out by Dickinson. You know, Marathon Oil's got a plant they retrofitted for renewable diesel. And, of course, you know, we've got a new crush plant, soybean crush plant announced for North Dakota. And, of course, all that oil's committed to going there. And they're using the corn oil out of the ethanol. And, you know, another thing to add on to Gary's comment, you know, like Red Trail Energy in North Dakota, an ethanol plant is going to start doing carbon capture and storage, you know, pumping the CO2 down to the geological formation. And that ethanol, you talk about a low carbon index fuel, it's much lower than an electric vehicle. It's much lower than anything on the market. And the potential for that is huge. So if you talk about, if you really want to reduce carbon intensity on these fuels, I mean, ethanol is going to be a huge player. I know everybody was on board a couple of years ago. I watched a Senate hearing. Everybody's on board for higher octane engines. It's more power, more fuel. You know, GM, I think, said they could advance their fuel economy 3% tomorrow if you let them, if you give them a 95 minimum octane rating so they could increase compression ratios on their engines. And everybody's on board with that except the oil industry.
Yep.
You know, so they're really the only ones fighting this, you know. So it's one of those deals. Call comes
I
down to political poll, you know.
Yep. Yep. I hear you, man. You guys hitting it hard. It's awesome to hear that kind of support for the biofuels, whether it be ethanol, whether it be the next gen of engines, whether it be the renewable diesel that is having such a big impact out there right now. Good work, you guys. Stay with us when we come back. Guys, the House passed the blueprint for a $3.5 trillion social spending bill. Okay, how's the money going to be spent? But first off, where's it going to come from?
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back. Glad that you could join us this morning. I'm Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with us. We've got the Farmer Forum going, which is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. To learn more about the movement and ACAM's partners, visit www.agweb.com/ACAM. Mike Appert from North Dakota, Gary Niemeyer from Illinois on the Farmer Forum today. Guys, Speaker Pelosi is using, I didn't even realize that there was such a thing out there that is being put to work, deem and pass. It's a tool called deem and pass. In other words, it looks like she was counting up votes on the $3.5 trillion social package, Gary, saw that she didn't have enough and just said, no, we're still going to push this through anyway. It feels kind of astonishing that this is happening.
Amazing would be a term that I would use. And I think what you're going to get to, so if you're going to pass a $3.5 trillion bill, how are you going to fund that? Is it funny money? And this is the thing that bothers me. I've always been against biting the hand that feeds you, and why they want to pick on agriculture now, I guess it's, I don't know. And, you know, we're talking about stepped up basis, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Got a note here from at Corn Firmer Mike. He says, we're going to be working until we are 80. Paying for this is going to be a stretch, isn't it, Mike?
Well, I think it's impossible. It's probably the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, these economies have been burdened with the COVID and everything else. And, you know, you can't just sit and print money forever. Post-World War I Germany or Zimbabwe or somebody would have been more successful. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You destroy the monetary system. But I don't know. You know, it's not good for America long term. I'm not sure. It's disappointing, to say the least. And maybe disgusting would be a proper word. But, yeah, I think it'd be the end. You know, the step-up basis and all this, you know, the way they're trying to handle this estate tax, it'd probably be the end of the family farm structure as we know it. Probably have to go into, like, a corporate ownership where shareholders own it, and then, of course, it never changes hands if the corporation owns it, right? So
right.
It would just destroy the family farm structure that we know today.
You know, it's not just the farm structure. I mean, we're talking about family businesses. I don't care if it's a dry cleaner or your farm. They're all looking at the same situation. And, I mean, it's the economic fabric that it's what keeps the economy moving along, or these smaller businesses out there and we're threatening them, Gary, and it's concerning. Now, the $1.2 trillion physical infrastructure package, there's some things in there that you can that I can get behind anyway. What about you, Gary?
Well, as you know, Chip, for 25 years, I've been working on upgrading our inland waterway structure. And now, considering the fact that we're probably going to export a lot of corn and a lot of soybeans this year, we need to plus bring in fertilizer and chemicals and seed and utilize the whole river system to be more efficient. We are happy that there's a $2.5 billion for full federal funding is provided for construction of inland waterways projects in the Senate bill. And to put it in context, this is roughly $2 billion or 400% increase from the last significant infrastructure funding package passed under the Obama administration in 2009. And the additional funding combined with full appropriations of inland waterway construction equates to about over $4 billion. I got to get the
billion.
B right.
Yeah.
Over the next 5 years for inland waterway construction and rehabilitation, we're just trying to make it more profitable for farmers to grow crops, and that's the reason we want to upgrade these systems. Plus, all this flooding has just destroyed our waterways. Yeah. Something terrible.
Yeah, Yeah. What do you see in the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure package, Mike, that you like?
Well, I mean, there, like you said, there's some good things in there. Of course, there's a lot of fluff too. You know, the bridges that go to nowhere, however you want to see it. It seems like when the government spends money, the efficiency drops. But I'm glad some of this stuff is getting funded. The only thing that scares me, you know, a lot of this stuff gets tied up with environmental issues and regulations. It's hard to do anything, and then the cost gets so high. So, you know, that regulatory environment is frightening too. You know, it's just, you know, but hopefully, you know, hopefully we get something accomplished here that isn't so destructive monetarily, that, you know, hopefully there isn't so much waste.
Right, right. Gotcha. Hey, what's the chatter up your way, Mike, about the new crush facility at Spirit Wood? Is that coming along?
Yeah, you know, that's an ADM inspired deal. Now Marathon went in and did they take a 25% stake in it?
They're
or something?
In with them. I'm not exactly sure what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, don't quote me on the percent, but it's like a 25% stake in it, because they're going to want the oil for their renewable diesel. And of course, you know, that's not a pretty big footprint up there, so I'm sure they're going to do some carbon capture storage. There's going to be some neat things. You know, North Dakota's got this geology where we can pump the CO2 down in this pore space, so we can actually run at a, you know, carbon neutral type situation. Yeah. It's pretty neat with our geography. So who knows what they all got planned, but we're just waiting for it to get built. It's kind of exciting. We need it, you know, and it'll be good for the soybean growers in North Dakota.
Absolutely. Gary, what's happening over in Illinois that we need to know about quick?
Well, we're going to have a fairly decent crop this year. Our governor, it seems like he's trying to pass the sixth or seventh, I've lost track, a renewable energy bill passed through the House and the Senate. And ironically, they were going to eliminate coal for electricity in the year 2035. Now they're going to try to utilize some good clean coal technologies to make it to 2045. So sometimes people do realize you can't do this stuff.
Yep. Gary, Mike, thank you guys so much for being part of the Farmer Forum today. Really appreciate it. That's Gary Niemeyer over in Illinois, Mike Appert up in North Dakota. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Steve Nicholson from Rabo Research is going to be our guest on AgriTalk.